south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
You know, on last week's show, when I spoke about how third world countries will always remain third world countries, no matter how much they insist that someday they will be first world, well, I knew I was going to get a lot of heat and feedback for that, because we mentioned the fact that third world countries dominate in low IQs on an average, and the woke, snowflake, cancel culture, white-bashing crowd do not like to broach the subject of IQs. They don't like the science behind it because it conflicts with their version of the truth. Like, there can be different versions of the truth, huh? Even though we went through the example of how the U.S. government has been doing IQ testing on the military personnel for over 100 years, and in that time they've tested over 100 million people, I suggest you listen to last week's show if you're not up on what we're talking about here. You know, I thought I'd get dumped on for that, but guess what? Surprise, surprise, I had lots of military and ex-military people writing to me saying things like this. Let me just take an excerpt here. Miss C, who's obviously military, writes this. She says, Johnny, I want to correct you on the ASVAB test. It's an acronym, so we say it ASVAB. Everything else you said was spot on. In fact, the lowest ASVAB scores are for Army cooks and drivers. Those two cohorts are by far the dumbest people I've ever met in the Army. And Johnny, the Army uses a subset of the ASVAB test called the GT score, which means general technical score, for reading, writing, arithmetic, etc. And that's how the candidate gets their particular job. The average GT score needed for intense jobs is 110. Then she says, of course, the ASVAB test isn't perfect because some people are just good at taking tests. But overall, it is great because you know by those numbers exactly where they are in the competency scale. Anyway, Johnny, love the show. Signed, Missy. Anyway, I got quite a few positive emails on that order from military and ex-military saying, yeah, Johnny, you're right. If you got an IQ of less than 81, you get washed out. And quite a few listeners asked me for the link to that worldwide IQ report for 2022 that the whole discussion was based on. It's quite sad, really, and sometimes I wish I hadn't run across it. And if you want to be a little bit sad, too, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll send you a link to that report. Seems as if the whole world, except the Asian countries, are being dumbed down. Though, one thing I know for sure, an IQ of 81 or less does qualify you for Congress. Seems to be a prerequisite. Along with the ability to spend like a drunken sailor, of course. Oh, and remember Bush Jr.? He had never even made it into Congress. I guess an IQ of 50 or less gets just straight to the presidency. And then there's Biden, a guy who's proved to the world that to be president, your brain doesn't need to be connected to your mouth, only your ass. But I digress, as usual. Speaking of getting the hell out of Dodge, were we speaking of getting the hell out of Dodge? Well, we are now. We got this email from Horace. He says, Dear Johnny, most people now are absolutely certain inflation is here to stay, soon to get completely out of control. Thing is, we might not be able to beat inflation, but there are some ways to ameliorate it. You see, in the world of finance, there are three undisputable laws. The U.S. dollar has no bottom, Bitcoin has no top, and the more beer you drink, the more money you save. Don't laugh. If you drink enough beer, you'll pass out, and naturally you'll stop spending. Stop eating, too. He says, Johnny, in these precarious inflationary times, drinking beer is the only responsible thing to do. It's a tough goal, but it needs to be done. Wives and girlfriends need to support their men in this endeavor and make sure they create extra room in the fridge next to those TV dinners for an additional six-pack at all times. Everyone needs to do their part if we're going to beat this thing. But seriously, he says, my grandfather used to tell me stories about how it was in the Depression days of the 1930s. He lived right near the famous Route 66 that went cross-country from the East Coast all the way to California. It was the only way to go cross country before the interstate system started with Eisenhower in the 1950s. which, by the way, might have been the very last government program that actually served the taxpayers in the short and the long run. But before that, my grandfather, most every day, he would sit on the porch and watch people hitchhiking with signs that said, California or bust. Even old jalopies, he said. And rotted out pickup trucks with people in the back would have signs that said, California or bust. And sometimes, he said, there'd even be a carload full of pretty girls, 20-somethings, that had signs that said, Hollywood or bust. I guess they were the Marilyn Monroe or Kardashian wannabes of their day. Then Horace says, my grandpa told me everyone wanted to go to California because there were jobs out there, while the rest of the country was falling apart. Plus, they had the Dust Bowl going in the Midwest. Yep, the word was out all over the country. There were jobs in California. Agricultural jobs, jobs in the airplane factories. It was growing like wildfire. And even if you couldn't get a decent job out there, the weather was so nice you could pinch a tent and sleep on the beach. In fact, there were little tent towns popping up all over called Hoovervilles, as in Herbert Hoover. Homeless people tent towns. Yeah, that's right. Where have we heard that before? Then he says, Johnny, just a few years ago, before the COVID thing and before all the street people started taking over San Francisco and L.A., stories like my grandfather told would have sounded outrageous. That was way back when in the Great Depression. That could never happen again. The United States is all grown up, sophisticated, and techno-savvy. Hard to believe 90 years ago, a vast wave of people were taking to the highways with signs that said, California or bust. Isn't it funny, though? The more things change, the more they stay the same. Today, people are flowing in the opposite direction. It's more like, for astute people anyway, get out of California or basically the whole USA or bust. In short, get out of Dodge or bust. Think of it. In the U.S., the wealthy people are rich, but only on paper. They're in debt like everyone else, supported by historically low interest rates. Interest rates that are creeping up and will strangle them shortly. Yep, most all rich people, except the mega wealthy, are in trouble. They're the ones, along with the banks that actually own the property and issue the loans, that are going to suffer. Which is why it's so important not to put any faith in what the lamestream media is saying about the financial news. The Federal Reserve has no choice but to keep the massive printing going, keep the leveraged equity markets and leveraged real estate markets going up and up and up forever. Of course, we know they can't do that, but that's the plan, and there is a massive crash coming. Take it from me, Johnny, I've been in the brokerage business for 30 years. You could say I'm in the business of helping people lose their money. I've had that thought in the back of my mind for a long, long time. I live with it every day. I don't care what you sell. Every salesman has a little bit of larceny in them. In the brokerage line, we're in the business of selling hope. Have you ever once considered where us brokerage people really make our money? On commissions, of course. We don't make our money in the market, even though it seems we're wired into it. We don't have a crystal ball. You might think we do, but we're just selling a product. We don't care that much about the market. Sure, we like it when it goes up because all our clients are happy. But we make money whether it's going up or down. We churn our clients. It's a nasty word, but that's how we make our money. Though we'd never come right out and tell you that. We're in our own little state of denial. We don't much like clients who just buy and hold. Then we don't make anything. But let me tell you, Johnny, if all of us brokers had to go to confession tomorrow, churning our clients would be our original sin. That said, the fact is, a massive crash is coming. Of course, there's always been doomsayers and people crying wolf, saying the collapse is right around the corner, but it never comes. Well, it is coming. We're on the cusp of it. It's the perfect storm of government, commercial, and personal financial mismanagement. And most of us brokers know it. The ones that don't see it are in denial. What do you talk about in private around the office water cooler? You might want to ask yourself, what do you think we talk about? For the public, we put on a happy face, all right, but deep down, we're scared. So what's the average guy to do? Well, the average guy is screwed. Mr. Average, there's no helping him. What about the above average guy? Depends if they're tuned into the alternative media or not. Unfortunately, most aren't. The only Americans that will weather this thing are the ones that have got no debt and own their own homes. Still, inflation will ramp way up and they'll take a big hit too. We'll all get hurt, but who will get hurt the least? It's not complicated. Here's the simple answer. Even if you own just one home, a beach cabana or whatever, in a foreign country, as long as you own it outright, it's better than 10 homes that you might own in the USA. Because you never really own your home in the USA. You're just a perpetual renter and your state government's your landlord. And he's a deadbeat landlord at that. He never does any repair. But man, you better not miss a rent payment. Think of it. A $5,000 a year property tax bill is pretty normal throughout the United States. That's about $420 a month. If, for example, you rent a house in Mexico, for that amount, $420 a month, you're considered upper middle class, and most likely you'll be living in a nice gated guarded community with a great view and upscale neighbors with nicer cars than yours. Or you'll be living in a residential tower. I'm not talking about Cancun or Tulum where you'll pay double that. I'm talking about way off the tourist trail. Anyway, Johnny, as you know, if you have no debt, own your own home, have solar electricity, solar hot water, rainwater catchment, and grow your own food, if you still live in the States, you could sit back on your porch like my grandfather did during the Depression and watch the parade of fools go by with their signs saying, not California or bust, but Texas or bust. That's the trend these days, as if Texas was the promised land. As you probably know, we're seeing a lot of that already. Texas is still part of the USA, part of the problem. It may be the last man standing, but it'll fall. As for me, I've made my plans. I've got a house in Mexico. I know, Johnny, you're not big on Mexico. Well, I didn't catch your show till about 2 years ago, and by then I'd already planted a flag there. Yes, if I'd have done a little more research, I'd have gone south of the border, but I still consider myself one of the lucky ones to have been able to get the hell out of Dodge before the walls came tumbling down. And I'm fine with weathering the storm in Mexico. At least we'll never have food or food supply chain problems, or fossil fuel shortages, for that matter. Oh, and when Americans up in the States ask me about my property taxes, I just look at them and laugh and say, what you pay for your property taxes in 1 year covers mine for 10. So glad I did it, Johnny, though I do worry about my friends and relatives in the U.S., but you can't live their lives for them. They're zombies, dead men walking, and they don't even know it. That's my rant, Johnny, for what it's worth. 6-2 and even, over and out. Signed, Horace. All right, Horace, congrats on your move, and thanks for that. Let's take another email. This comes from longtime listener Cameron. He says, Johnny, what are the people in Latin America thinking and talking about in regards to the Russia-Ukraine war thing? Is it on anyone's radar over there? Are the locals talking about it? If so, what are they saying? All right, me, Johnny, here. There's more to that email, and we'll get to that next. But first, let's answer that part. Well, Cameron, seems like the only people that are interested or who are talking about it are gringos and expats. You'd think that since every Latino down here, as well as people from the States, are addicted to their cell phones, they'd be reading the news feeds about Ukraine and Russia all the time and with great interest. But they're not paying attention. They don't care. It might as well be taking place on the moon. They just read the headline or barely read it and skip right over to TikTok. You know who does give a damn, though? All the gringos and expats you talk to. Especially the ones that are bored and sedentary, have nothing to do but look at the idiot mainstream talking heads on CNN, Fox News, and the rest of them. Which brings us back to the rest of Cameron's email. He says, Johnny, I read a recent report from a noted historian, Dr. Gideon Poya, who's counted 70 different times the U.S. has invaded other nations since 1776. That's about one invasion every 3 to 4 years for the U.S. So why get upset with Russia when it invades Ukraine? That's the American way. Sometimes we invade foreign nations in order to protect the existing regime, even if it's brutal or toxic, as long as the tyrants in charge are playing ball with us. Sometimes we invade to change the existing regime, because it's not friendly to our business interests there. It's that old, tired 20th century building democracy rhetoric. Taken all together, he says, the cost of meddling in other countries' affairs is headed towards $1 trillion a year, or more than 10 grand per household per year. It's simple arithmetic. You can do the math yourself. Hell, Johnny, costs money to run an empire. The thing is, though, when you invade a country, it's supposed to be a paying proposition. Look at the Romans, the Spaniards, the French, the Brits. They all plundered and ended up richer. That was the formula, for a while anyway, but soon enough, they all faced the law of diminishing returns. So the proposition that you invade, you steal, you enslave, and you end up richer doesn't work so well in the 21st century. These days, when the U.S. invades, they turn the target into a bombed-out money pit, dumping billions to support the local warlords, propping up economies, and donating billions to its own military surveillance industries. The local hustlers and criminals get rich. Sometimes they get gifts of truckloads of money from none other than the U.S. government. That's exactly what Obama did during his wars. We often pay off or bribe insurgents to fight our wars for us. While back at home, defense contractors like Raytheon, General Dynamics, and the Boeing executives, etc., get filthy rich. The lobbyists in Congress get rich, too. Retired generals get to join defense contractor boards of directors, and they get rich. And congressional scum like Nancy Pelosi become filthy rich on defense contractor inside trading deals. Sometimes I wonder, Johnny, if anyone really reads or understands history at all. Take the history of empires. They all start and end up the same. For example, the Roman Empire. Little by little, they made their gold coins smaller and started diluting them with base metals. Then they switched to silver. The silver denarius. It was 95% silver when Augustus introduced it. A century later, it was only 85% silver. And the silver kept disappearing. A century later, the coin was reduced to only 50% silver. Then, by the year 268 AD, there was hardly any silver at all in it. Only about 5%. Then, a century later, Rome was no more. It fell. Now, you might say, so what? It took many centuries for Rome to fall. But back then, it took months to get a simple message to the farthest outposts they had in England. You might remember that's why Hadrian built that famous wall in northern UK. The barbarians at the gates and all that. But now, in the 21st century, news travels around the world in less than a second. Then Cameron says, I wonder if 1 in 1,000 Americans knows anything at all about that story I just related. Funny thing is, of all the empires that ever existed, that's exactly how they all debased their money. They started with gold, went to silver, and eventually to the base metals, copper, nickel, and brass. And the U.S. has exactly followed that same pattern. They've gone from the gold to the silver to the base metals, and now there's nowhere else to go. Except to a central bank digital currency like China has. Then it's game over not only for privacy, but for personal liberty, too. All the best. Signed, Cameron. P.S. Keep the great shows coming. Just one request. Tell us a little bit more about that stem cell clinic in the DR. I'd really like to go, but I speak no Spanish. Would Google Translate work? Would that be enough? All right, Cameron, thanks for that. I'll fill you in a little bit more on the DR thing in just a few minutes. But I do want to add just a little bit to your Roman currency devaluation story. Turns out as the Romans conquered more territory and they reached all the way up to England, like you said, the coin of the realm was the silver denarius. In fact, it was the coin of the realm throughout the Western world. And of course, all the Roman soldiers and legions had to be paid. So the Roman treasury would send wagon loads of denarius coins up north to pay the troops. And you might imagine horse-drawn carts filled with that stuff on bad roads took months to get up through to their final destinations. And along the way, astute paymasters found they could snip little bits of silver off the edges of those coins. That's why when you see pictures of old Roman coins, and even if you handle one personally, they're slightly oblong and not exactly symmetrical. When they were stamped, they were. By the time they got to the furthest outpost, they were clipped. So Romans started putting edges, or reeds, R-E-E-D-S, on the edges of their coins to discourage clipping. Clipped coins would be accepted, but not at their full value. Just check any of the U.S. coins in your pocket. The higher denomination ones have reeds on them. But only because of tradition, they mean absolutely nothing because no one clips coins anymore because they're not worth their own weight in base metal if you melted them down. In fact, you should have been on higher alert that there's something really wrong with the U.S. funny money system in 1982 when they took the copper out of pennies and they switched to copper-plated zinc. Didn't that seem a bit odd to you? I mean, if you were alive back then. Because starting then, if you collected real copper pennies and took them to the scrapyard, you'd get more than a penny for each one in its copper value. But as usual, no one paid attention. Nor did anyone pay attention in 1964 when the shit really hit the fan. When they took all the silver out of the coinage. Because in 1964, if you took a dime, quarter, or half dollar to the scrapyard, they'd give you more than its face value because the silver was worth more than the value of the coin stamped on it. But that raised the alarm with almost no one except coin collectors. Though that date, 1964, really was the beginning of the end of the U.S. funny money system. Though most people who were in the know on such things would say it was 1971 when Nixon took us off the gold standard and he closed the international gold window. By the way, did you know that $9 today purchases what $1 did in 1964? In other words, a person making $10,000 a year in 1964 makes the equivalent of $90,000 a year today. Now, if you don't think there's something really f***ed up about that, then you deserve to stay on the good ship USA, otherwise known as the Titanic. Now, here's something you'll never hear about in the news. You might remember in a past show I mentioned that the Russians, including the Ukrainians, have never been able to travel visa-free to any Western country. That is, if they wanted to visit, let's say, the States or Mexico or Canada, anywhere in Europe, they'd have to go down and apply to get a 30- or 90-day tourist visa to their destination country's particular consulate or embassy in their capital city. For example, if you're from Moscow and you want to visit England, you'd have to go down to the UK consulate in Moscow and apply for a visa. And that means a lot of hoops to jump through, plus interviews and bank statements, personal and professional references and all that. Just a ton of hoops to jump through. That's why when you're traveling, you almost never see Russian or Ukraine tourists. Have you ever run into any? Well, I never did until I visited the Dominican Republic. Turns out it's the only Western country that allows Russians and Ukrainians to fly in visa-free for 30 days. It's the same standard 30-day tourist visa U.S. citizens automatically get when they arrive. That's why when you go to the all-inclusive resorts down there, you run into Ukrainians and Russians all the time. In fact, the menus are in English, Spanish, and Russian. I've never seen that anywhere in the world. Not to mention there's lots of Dolph Lundgren clones running around. I know, he's not Russian, but, you know, he plays one on TV. Now, you have to remember, the resort area in Dominican Republic is huge. They've got over 200 all-inclusive resorts, and some of them are like cities in themselves. That means lots of direct flights from Moscow, St. Petersburg, etc. In fact, many times I've had discussions with Russian and Ukrainian couples at those resorts, and they seem to get along with each other just fine. But imagine this scenario. There's all kinds of Russians and Ukrainians stuck in those resorts in the Dominican Republic right now. That means there are hundreds, if not thousands, of Russians and Ukrainians hanging side by side, maybe even partying together while their countries are at war. And since they are at war, all those chartered flights to return home to Russia or the Ukraine have been halted. That means lots of those Russians and Ukrainians are on extended vacations. I don't know who's paying for it. But I know that the government of the DR has lots more sympathy for the Ukrainians stuck there than the Russians. How do I know that? Well, because arrangements have been made to fly back 3,000 Ukrainians who've overstayed their 30-day tourist visas. And no one mentioning any of that for those stranded Russians. Now, this is strange. Since the war has been going over 30 days now, every single Russian and Ukrainian in the DR has overstayed his visa. He's there illegally. Not their fault, of course. But you can imagine the problems, even the chaos going on at those resorts right now. Oh, and there's something related to that that's even crazier going on in the DR right now. And man, does this get interesting. Remember, Russians and Ukrainians are allowed to come into the DR for 30 days visa-free. They don't have to apply for a visa. They just can come and are granted one automatically. Well, guess what? Right smack in the Santo Domingo, Dominican Republic harbor, there's a $300 million spectacular yacht belonging to one of Russia's richest oligarchs. Now, of course, you've heard about how all the NATO countries and all Ukrainian-friendly nations have banned Russian boats and yachts from entering or docking in their waters. That means there are very few places for them to get refueled and resupplied. Add that to the fact that their bank accounts and credit lines have been blocked or frozen. That means they can't pay for supplies or even pay off their crew members. And that big $300 million yacht sitting in Santo Domingo Harbor, they've got at least 100 permanent crew members. By the way, I've got pictures of that thing. If you want to see it, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. They're photos I took because right this minute, I'm in the process of guiding two expat insider seminar attendees through the paces of going to that stem cell clinic I've been talking about on the show lately. And if you've been paying attention, you'll know that my brother was the stem cell poster child case for going to this clinic. And I'm happy to report that 2 months after getting his complete treatment, he's telling me his two shoulders are greatly improved. So much so that he used to have to take heavy painkillers every night before he went to bed because he just couldn't find a comfortable position. The shoulders hurt so much. He's reported in that they don't hurt and he no longer needs the painkillers to go to sleep. That in itself is a huge improvement. And he says his arthritis greatly improved too. And as for that very bad knee of his that had been operated on many times, he says it bothers him, but not as much. Before he got the stem cell treatments, I took a walk with him. He had to sit down and give it a rest every 2 blocks. Now he says he can walk continuously without resting, though it does still give him some problem, though not like it did before. We'll see. We'll keep on monitoring him. It's only been 2 months, and they say you generally start seeing results about 3 to 6 months after the treatment. So then how much of that is the placebo effect? Who knows? Like I said, we'll keep monitoring him. But so far, it looks good, and he's a happy camper. Oh, and how I stumbled on this $300 million Russian yacht. Well, that's because two seminar attendees are down here going through the stem cell treatment right now. I'm happy to say all the bugs have been worked out for non-Spanish-speaking gringos and expats who want to come down to the clinic. They've translated their intake forms to English. There's an English-speaking lady with a car that'll take you back and forth to your appointments every day from your hotel or resort and hold your hand through the whole process, just like I did for my brother. And now others are coming down too, like these two expat insider seminar attendees. Of course, I'm not involved in this, and I'm not going to hold anyone else's hand through it either. It's just that I'm the one who did the sleuthing and I discovered this place, so I liked the place a lot, but I couldn't recommend it until they changed a few things to make it user-friendly and smooth sailing for interested gringos and expats who don't speak Spanish. Oh, and for those gringos who think they speak Spanish, but in reality, it sucks. So anyway, while I was down there visiting the clinic, driving around, I spot this gigantic yacht sticking out like a UFO mothership in Santo Domingo Harbor. You could practically walk right up to it, too. And you know, it may stick out like a sore thumb, but it is no sore thumb. It's so elegant, beautiful, and it's got such great curves and lines. Almost like a cruise ship from the future that's been transported back in time. If you want to see what this thing looks like, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. You won't believe it. Oh, and of course, the Russian oligarch that owns that thing came into all that money legally. Yeah, right. And now from the fake news service you just love to hate, MSNBC. It says, physical fitness is now called white supremacy, according to MSNBC. A recent article warns that Americans who are trying to lose weight and become more fit are being radicalized because physical fitness has always been central to the far right. It says, number one, the author claims that Hitler was fixated on boxing and jiu-jitsu, therefore modernist combat sports like mixed martial arts must be full of white supremacist extremists. Therefore, all forms of fitness, including new pandemic-induced online fitness trends, are based in white supremacy. There are, it says, online networks of fascist fitness chat groups recruiting people to white supremacist extremist ideologies lured by fitness health tips and strategies for positive physical changes, saying that new recruits are then later invited to closed chat groups where far-right content is shared. Ooh. So, all you fascist Aryan body wannabe fitness freaks out there, how's your plan B coming?
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long expat insider seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.